Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast that helps you sculpt your dreams into reality. For this episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for clicking on the podcast to check out the content. This podcast presents a psychotherapist and Zen Buddhist perspective on the mind and how it manifests your moment-to-moment reality. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you master your reality, master your life, through mastery of your mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. Now, we have a couple of series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism, we have our Zen stream on Sundays, and then I do try whenever I can to throw in an extra episode every week, hitting on a different kind of topic, maybe something about manifesting, law of attraction, modern psychology, psychotherapy. That's my background. For those of you who don't know, I have been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years, And I bring some of that experience and knowledge to the podcast here to help you, as I always say, to reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live a happier day-to-day life. Now, for today, as I said in the intro, it is time for our Zen stream. It is Sunday, and I have been sharing from this book written by a pretty well-known Vietnamese Zen monk named Thich Nhat Hanh. He wrote a book called Your True Home. He's written a lot of books, but this particular one is called Your True Home, and it's a collection of very short meditations. And I've been coming back to it for our Zen stream because it's just chock full of really good stuff, and I found a good one here that kind of gave me an idea, something that we can discuss. We're basically going to be hitting on quite a few topics. We're going to be talking about meditation. We're going to be talking about understanding the mind, and we're going to be really, I hope, making very clear how it is that our experience, our moment-to-moment experience, and our reality really is purely a manifestation of our mind and our mental state. So let me start by reading the short little meditation here in the book. And then I have a couple of other sources that I'm going to pull from just a tiny little bit, just to kind of supplement this particular little meditation. And of course, and we'll discuss it a little further. And hopefully, we'll get something really good coming out of all this stuff. So let's start with this. This particular chapter meditation is called Mindfulness of the Mind. And it goes like this. To take hold of your mind, you must practice mindfulness of the mind. You must know how to observe and recognize the presence of every feeling and thought that arises in you. The Zen master, Thuong Chu, wrote, "If the practitioner knows his own mind clearly, he will obtain results with little effort. But if he does not know anything about his own mind, all of his effort will be wasted," end quote. If you want to know your own mind, there is only one way: to observe and recognize everything about it. This must be done at all times during your day-to-day life, no less than during the hour of meditation. And that is the end of the short chapter there. So one thing I believe he's making very clear here, and I'm going to be, like I said, reading a couple other things to you that connect with this and tie into other things, is he's basically saying that, which I believe 100% to be true, that much of the reason why we don't understand the way our life is, meaning the reasons for why things manifest in our lives, why, you know, we may be attracting bad things or we have attracted bad things, or maybe why we don't get desired results, we don't reach certain goals, the underlying reason, right? There could be a number of surface reasons for that, right? A number of things we can blame, a number of external factors that we can point to and say, oh, it's because this and this and this and this happened. But underlying all of that, if you dig deeply and deeply and deeply enough, eventually you come to the realization that if something in the external reality is something that you don't understand how it got there and you don't like it, it's because there's some part of our own mind that we do not understand, okay? Very, very important point is that the more we are able to understand ourselves and really connect with every part of ourselves, the more our outward reality will start to reflect that kind of insight and that kind of knowledge. Because ultimately, the external reality that we see and that we experience is nothing more than a manifestation of our mind and the collection of stuff that's built up in our mind during our lives. And of course, there are lots of sources for that information, right? There's our upbringing, our cultural beliefs, our religious beliefs, stuff I've talked about here a bunch of times, socioeconomic condition under which we were raised, really the culture, I mean, endless number of factors. All of these things through our lives shape our mind in a certain way, and that shape that the mind has been given is what creates directly the shape of our experience, the shape of our lives, the shape of our moment-to-moment reality. So understanding our lives, the way that they exist in this moment, is always 100% about understanding our own minds. Now, interestingly, throw a little curveball at you here. There's a pretty famous Zen. There's a pretty famous Zen Buddhist, Bodhidharma. For those of you who know a little bit about Buddhism, history of Buddhism, very, very interesting figure. Bodhidharma is kind of a fascinating character. He supposedly, okay, and of course, this is all, you know, probably truth mixed with legend and folk tales and folklore, whatever word you want to use. So you always have to take this with a grain of salt. But the stories I have heard is that Bodhidharma was one of these kind of stereotypical kind of Zen masters. He went out into a mountain, found a cave, stayed in there for, you know, a certain number of years, became, you know, one of the most enlightened masters everywhere. And supposedly, he was quite a character. So he was very gruff. He was very kind of aggressive, I guess might be a good way to put it. And he was very challenging to others, you know, to other schools of thought at the time. There's a very famous story about Bodhidharma where, and again, I'm kind of paraphrasing this a little bit, but he comes to visit a very powerful monarch at the time who had, you know, given a lot of money to erect Buddhist statues and kind of contributed a lot to local Buddhist monasteries. And he had, you know, kind of given all this money, this financial support to different causes that he felt were in line with Buddhism. And so he, you know, he had called forth Bodhidharma to speak to him. And according to legend, he asked Bodhidharma, hey, look, you know, I've given money to this, I've erected this number of statues, I have done all this stuff, I've given all this stuff to Buddhism, what merits have I earned? And Bodhidharma looked at him and said, nothing, none. And you could imagine to tell a monarch this at that time, right, is crazy. I mean, you look, you're getting your head chopped off for all you know. And he goes, and he said, and again, I wish I had, I should have gotten the exact story here. But, you know, so he basically says, well, you know, how is that so? Why is that? And Bodhidharma apparently responded something like, basically he said, nothing is whole, all is empty and nothing is holy, right? And the guy's like, well, then who the heck are you? Like, what are you doing here? And his answer was, I don't know. And he stormed out and left the hall and left the monarch kind of standing there like, what the heck just happened, you know? So this was kind of like the kind of person supposedly that Bodhidharma was. And so he has a quote. He has a lot of really great quotes if you look him up. But one of my favorite quotes of his, which ties directly to what we're talking about here in this episode, is he says, if you use your mind to study reality, you won't understand either your mind or reality. If you study reality without using your mind, you'll understand both. I just absolutely love that quote. And let me talk about this a little bit and why I'm saying this is so important, how it ties to the little meditation that I read, and it ties to the point that I was making of to understand why things are the way they are in your life. It's about having a better understanding of the mind, of the self. Now, keep in mind here, no pun intended, when he uses this word mind in this particular quote, okay, my opinion, is he's talking here about our kind of thinking mind, our chatty mind, our monkey mind is one way we talk about it in Buddhism. It's the mind that never shuts up, right? It's always commenting, comparing, and I talk about this area of our mind a whole lot. You know, it's the thinking mind, the linear mind, the problem-solving mind, the limited mind, okay? The mind that is caught in our experience of time, okay? It's a very kind of practical day-to-day mind. And this mind, okay, I always like to add this. It's not an enemy. It's not something we have to get rid of. It's not something we're never supposed to use. It's a tool. It's a practical tool. It's one of the many tools in our toolbox. And we do need to use this mind and have a good relationship with this area of our mind. But I think what he's saying here, which I think is very true, is that that part of our mind can never really understand the true nature of reality, can never really understand the manifesting process of how we are creating our experience on a moment-to-moment basis. It is, if you like this metaphor, try to imagine all of mind as a great iceberg, right? This thinking mind is like the tip of the iceberg, okay? So it's just the very, very tip. And one of the things that I think really trips up a lot of people is that they approach understanding reality, understanding themselves, understanding their whole minds or the manifesting process with this limited tip of the iceberg type of mind. And of course, that's just not going to work. So how do we get, quote unquote, out of this mind and into what we can call, I wish I had a good term for it, but we want to call it, I guess you could call it the higher mind or maybe, you know, source consciousness or Buddha mind, maybe a good word for it. It's basically the part of our consciousness that exists beyond this limited tip of the iceberg mind. How do we get there? How do we develop that kind of understanding? Because developing that kind of understanding is really what is going to change the whole game when we look at how, when we want to understand how and why our lives are the way they are, and not only that, but then use that knowledge to create an amazing shift in our experience of living. So let me get into that in just a moment. I'm just going to pause here to allow a word from a sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right, you all, thank you for your patience. So we've talked about the little meditation, right, but by Thich Nhat Hanh. I also read to you the quote from Bodhidharma. And I want to read to you one more tiny little thing that I think is very interesting. And this is coming from an article in NLP World. I believe that's Neuro-Linguistic Programming, if I'm not mistaken. The title of the article is "It's Your Mind That Creates This World." Buddha literally says that in the title. And it's written by someone named Terry Elston. So it's just one little quote here, very short, I wanted to read to you. And the quote is actually by another person. But it says here, "This universe begins to look more like a great thought than a great machine. Mind no longer appears as an accidental intruder into the realm of matter. We are beginning to suspect that we ought rather to hail it as the creator and governor of the realm of matter. We discover that the universe shows evidence of a designing or a controlling power that has something in common with our own individual minds." So, as I've said here, that's the end of the quote. And by the way, I'm sorry, that quote is by James Jeans from The Mysterious Universe. I guess it's another book that I guess this gentleman wrote, James Jeans. So something that I've alluded to here, right, on the podcast multiple times and on the YouTube channel is that we are coming to a point in time where scientists are beginning to realize with further and further clarity that what we are experiencing in our moment-to-moment reality is nothing more than a, how do I put it? And I've said it here so many times, sometimes I feel like I'm a broken record, but it's the idea that I'm getting at is that literally everything that we're surrounded by is nothing more than just a bunch of, you know, molecules, quantum particles, right? It's just all vibrating at different frequencies. And this is, you know, this used to sound to me like so new agey and far out there, but it's actual like fact now. And you could look this up. I mean, it's all over everywhere. Pretty much everything that's composed, matter, solid objects, everything, it's just molecules brought together, you know, in a certain vibration. And it basically our five senses that interprets that into stuff, right? So everything you encounter, whatever you're sitting on, whatever you're looking at, whatever you're hearing, everything, all this stuff is just sensory information. It's literally just data being interpreted by our five senses. And our mind is taking this information and it's converting it into experience. And we really, going back to the point of this whole episode, is we really, really, really want to pay a lot of attention to how exactly our mind is doing that. Because by learning more about how our mind is doing that on a moment-to-moment basis, you will come to understand why exactly your life is the way it is. And that knowledge in and of itself is going to empower you to be able to change whatever it is that you're experiencing and really boost you into a whole different level of living. This is something that I have personally experienced. And I had, it's so funny, I want to share this with you. It's kind of a very personal story and it has a punchline at the end. It's pretty funny. But something I thought I'd share with you, which I thought was really a touching moment for me. I had a moment with my son earlier this week. He's 9 years old. And I was drying him. He had just come out of the shower and I was helping him dry off. And he says to me, "Oh, look, an eyelash fell off." He had an eyelash on his finger. And I don't know if you know about that whole, you know, thing that if you then you put your finger on top of his finger and you both close your eyes and make a wish and then you pull your two fingers apart and whoever the eyelash sticks to, that wish is going to be granted. That's something you may know about, may not know about, but it's something I heard as a child. So I said, "Oh, let's make a wish. So I put my finger on top of his finger where the eyelash was. We held them together. We both closed our eyes. And I had this very interesting moment when I closed my eyes because I couldn't think of anything to wish for. I literally could not think of any way that my life could be better or any way that moment could have been better than it was. It was a moment of just bliss. It was a moment of perfection. And I was stumped. I was like, yeah, I mean, I could wish for more money. I could wish for, you know, I don't know, more vacations. I could wish for, but none of those things really seemed that important in that moment. So the only thought that came to me, the only thing I could wish for that I could think of is I wish for my son to have a safe and happy life. That was my wish, you know? And it was really funny because, you know, we both opened our eyes, we pulled our fingers apart, and I got the eyelash, right? It stuck to my finger. So he laughed, I laughed, and he goes, "What did you wish for?" And I said, "I'm not supposed to tell, it's a secret, otherwise the wish won't come true." You know, we were kind of giggling, going back and forth. And I finally said, "You really want to know what I wish for? You really want to know?" He says, "Yeah, I want to know." So I said to him, "Well, I just wish that you always be happy and safe." And he kind of looked at me and he had like a moment where he paused for a minute. I go, What did you wish for?" He goes, "I wished for $1 million. That was pretty funny. But, you know, it was just that moment right there. It's something that I don't think I'll ever forget because it was a moment where my external reality and what I wanted in my mind were this one and the same. And I got to tell you that having that kind of moment, I believe that's what enlightenment is all about, That's what it's really all about. It's not some superhuman, like Eckhart Tolle says in his book, it's not some kind of superhuman feat. It's basically about being able to experience such an overwhelming sense of gratitude for the way things exist exactly as they are in this moment. And interestingly, ironically, paradoxically, it's by having that kind of feeling that you then start to manifest more and more of what you want. It just happens automatically. It's not something that you really have to strive for or start learning a lot of techniques to manifest or start, you know, really grinding your gears to make it happen. It just starts to happen naturally. And that, I think, comes, it's a direct byproduct of really learning how the mind manifests, how it creates. And that's what this chapter, I think, is all about. When we go back to Thich Nhat Hanh's little meditation for the day, he goes, to take hold of your mind, which I think is what he calls it, understanding the mind, you must practice mindfulness of the mind. What is that? What is mindfulness of the mind? The best way that I could describe it is that we all know and can, I think, identify that voice that's always talking in our minds, always, like I said earlier, judging, comparing, planning, plotting, scheming, remembering the past, projecting to the future, going, you know, reminding you of problems, reminding you of stressors, of worries, of things that kick up anxiety. And we all know that mind, right? And many of us, we try, and I believe that in modern therapy, this exists as well. Although there are some areas where it's getting a little better, but we basically try to combat this mind on the level of mind. We say, well, okay, let's change, let's focus on something else, let's think about this, and those things can have some benefit. I'm not saying they're all bad, okay, but it's kind of like a Band-Aid. Okay, let's put a Band-Aid on this thing. But what mindfulness of the mind really means, and this is where, you know, I come back and I continue to harp on the importance of meditation, is that it's not about getting rid of that voice, right? That voice is the voice of that tip of the iceberg mind that I mentioned earlier. It's a problem-solving mind. It's a tool, okay? But many of us live our lives and experience our reality only through the scope of that tiny mind. And that, of course, I believe is the cause of a lot of mental illness, a lot of misery that people are struggling with. And it's really learning about how to experience our reality from the whole iceberg as opposed to just the tip of the iceberg. And how do we do that? How do we build that? Well, we don't get rid of the tip of the iceberg. We instead create more and more space around it. And this is what mindfulness of the mind is all about, which is taking time every single day, as I do, and as I highly recommend you do, to just simply sit with yourself, sit very, very still, like a statue. That's how I always say it, okay? Keep your body very, very still, because ultimately, body and mind are one. If you maintain your full stillness in your body, your mind will eventually slow down as well. And as you do that, what will happen is that you will have front and center in a spotlight, okay, that chatty, loud mind, that monkey mind, yapping away, talking to you about this, talking to you about that, reminding you of stressors, reminding you of worries, reminding you how stupid this is to be doing this, just chatting, 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 chatting. But all you have to do, so simple, is just watch it. That's it. That's all you have to do. And in time, you'll notice that requires effort. And especially in the beginning, it requires a lot of effort. And why is that? Use the metaphor of a muscle that you're trying to build. At first, like pull-ups, great example. When I first started doing pull-ups, they were almost impossible. It was like, oh my God, this is torture. And I had to start out with using one of those elastic bands to kind of support my feet so that, you know, I wasn't lifting my whole weight. This is very similar. When you first start doing this, your mind's going to kick, scream, throw tantrums. You know, you're going to start to feel very uncomfortable. It'll manifest in your body. You'll get aches and pains and sores and all this stuff. And what starts to happen if you're consistent, you don't give up, you persevere through that, is that your mental muscles, okay, to continue with the metaphor, are going to strengthen. That awareness muscle is going to strengthen. And then you will have, over time, such a strong beam of awareness, such a strong ability to observe everything from a distance. Again, you create so much space around that linear tip of the iceberg mind. And that space that you create, that is the rest of the iceberg. It is infinite in how large it is. It is infinite in how much it can give you. And it is infinitely available as a way for you to align to it. Okay, it makes itself more and more available. But that is the key message I want you to really hear from this episode, is that we have to start learning how to create more and more space around that thinking mind, that linear problem-solving, chatty, tip of the iceberg mind. Because as you do that, you are connecting and making more, you're able to kind of harness the power of the full iceberg, right? The whole mind, your whole consciousness source. That is really where you connect with it. And the more you are able to tap into that, the less the tip of the iceberg mind will trip you up, the less seriously you'll take it, and the more you will find yourself manifesting the life you've always wanted. So I really hope you found this information helpful today in your practice. Really want to thank you for listening. Stay tuned. I'll be back in a few days with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. Remember, if you ever have any questions, comments, concerns, you could always find any one of my YouTube videos on YouTube. Just search for Dreams Warp. Find any one of my videos. Post a comment under it. I get an alert right away. And say, hey, I just heard your podcast. Had a comment, concern, question. Always happy to engage with you all in the comments section over there on YouTube. All right. Again, thanks for listening. And we'll talk again soon.